right. I am here today joined by Melissa and Blythe.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Blythe. I'm so happy to see you here. Blythe has one of the best landscapes. Oh. Yards in Haines.
Thank you.
Lots of growing stuff and growing critters and everything else. Yeah.
Right. And we're going to be talking about that. We were all kind of giggling a little bit about the song Live and Die and Gone because that seems to be the theme for gardens at this point. But Blythe, welcome. It's great to have you being part of our garden conversation.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Oh, very glad to do so. This last summer, your garden was part of the garden tour that we did on the Sunday morning of the fair.
Yes, that was lots of fun.
And I have to tell you, I was so impressed by your garden, by your orchard, by the variety of fruit trees that you had, how you were using ducks to take care of your weeds, all of the things that you're growing in the greenhouse, and how you've incorporated so many permaculture principles into how you organized your garden. Just totally amazing.
And her duck pond.
And the duck pond?
Great
source of water for the garden.
Yeah, yes. And nutrient-rich water for the garden. Yeah, so we're going to talk about that. Recently, we've had John Norton and Kate Saunders on, and they've talked about fruit trees. So let's begin there. You have quite a few different kinds of fruit trees. What types do you have? What varieties? Where did you get them?
Well, I've got apple, sweet cherry, sour cherry, European plum, and Japanese or Asian plum, and also an odd one called a shapova. I got most of my stuff from Rain Tree, which I would really recommend.
Okay.
I also got some from a place called Burnt Ridge Nursery, and they've got good prices, good shipping prices, too. And I would also recommend them. I did get some from Stark, and I can't say I would recommend them. A few of the trees were not so healthy. So.
Okay. But Rain Tree is a northern...
Yeah, it's out of... I think it's out of Washington or Oregon. I think it's out of Oregon. And they have a really large selection. They list their rootstock, which is really important.
Uh-huh.
They just really have a good reputation. And I agree totally with the reputation. They've done, lots of good plants.
When you say they list their rootstock, what does that mean?
It means the fruit tree, what it's grafted onto. You rarely get a fruit tree that's on its own roots now. It's a particular variety that's grafted onto a rootstock, and the rootstock controls the hardiness of the tree to a certain extent, what kind of conditions it can handle, like wet, dry, that kind of thing. And it also can dwarf the tree. So if you get a dwarfing rootstock, you'll get a tree that should stay between about 8 to 10 feet, versus if you were to plant that same tree on its own roots, you'd get a 30-foot, 40-foot tree. So, it's really important to know what kind of rootstock you've got.
Okay.
One of the things that can happen with rootstock is that sometimes the rootstock will send out runners and you'll get little volunteer trees showing up.
Mm-hmm.
And you might have a peach, for instance, planted, and suddenly you've got plums showing up around the peach tree, and that's because it's coming from a plum rootstock. If the tree breaks down below the graft line, either by moose or snow or whatever, and you get a different kind of tree.
Yes.
And it's the rootstock tree coming up, which usually doesn't have as good a fruit.
Hmm. Normally what you want to do is if you do have suckers, they're called, that come up from the rootstock, you want to remove those because they'll take the nutrients that should be going into the cultivar that you're looking for, and it goes into that one instead, and that'll also normally be more vigorous because they're normally chosen for their hardiness and adaptability and their vigor. And so they can overtake the variety that you're wanting to grow. So.
Okay. Well, that's all good knowledge because I would have just assumed I forgot what I planted.
Maps labeled with what you've got are very handy. Keeping notes, very handy, yes. But we all have that, I wonder what that is. kind of thing that happens to us. How many different kinds of fruit trees do you have?
Wow. different types.
Well, or just how many trees do you have? Let's
trees,
go with that.
Okay. How many trees? Last time I counted, I had somewhere around 74.
Really?
Yes, I know. It's scary. I'm an addict.
Yeah. And this is on how big an area do you have those 74 trees?
Well, they're on about a little over a half acre.
Okay.
And they're all dwarf or semi-dwarf. And then a couple of them I actually have in pots in the greenhouse.
Okay.
But most of them are all dwarf, and I mean, I can only do that because I'm planning to keep up the pruning and making sure that I control the size of the tree. I dislike ladders. I came off a ladder a couple of weeks ago and whacked my knee badly. So me and ladders don't mix.
Yeah.
So I'm determined to keep my trees small.
Yeah. Very, very good. Very good choice. That's quite a variety. So one thing that you want to pay attention to, I'm sure you do this, is that, for instance, with cherries or something, you want to make sure that they either self-pollinate or that they have a pollinator also.
Yes,
you've got
yes.
a recommended pollinator.
Yeah. Because I have so many, I don't have to worry about that as much. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've got, I think, 8 different varieties of sweet cherry. So I don't have to worry personally about that. But yeah, if you're interested in just getting one or two, you need to make sure that the apples are compatible, that they will cross-pollinate. Mm-hmm. Basically, all apple trees require cross-pollination. Mm-hmm. So definitely.
So that's, yeah, and that also, the bloom time has to be the same time so that they can cross-pollinate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that is amazing. What kind of considerations did you think about as you were planting the trees?
Well, my first one was obviously hardiness. Then when they ripened, one of the things that I discovered in my research and Rob Goldberg's article on the web is really good for this is that you really, when you're selecting a fruit, you got to look at it and say, okay, is it going to ripen in time here? And what they say in the, you know, in the catalogs is not relevant for here. You have to add 4 to 6 weeks on to it because, you know, everything is a lot later when it wakens up and a lot earlier when it starts to get cold out.
Okay, so if it says it's going to be ripe in mid-July, then that really means here we're looking at mid-August, early September.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. The only time when I actually had things ripening when they more closer to when they should have was last summer when everything was weird.
We had such a beautiful, warm summer.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah, yes.
In 2016. Yeah. Oh. Yes, in memory.
Oh. Yes, yes.
And you have a fantastic piece of property. It's a south-facing slope.
Yes.
Which is totally ideal.
It is perfect. It's a gentle grade. It gets tons of sun. Yeah, it is the perfect thing. When I finally cleared it, I was like, ah, fruit trees.
If people are thinking about planting fruit trees next spring, would you recommend that they do any preparation now for that, or should they just wait till spring?
I would definitely not dig any holes. Maybe go out there. I mean, right now I would go out there and look and kind of plan where you're going to plant stuff, but don't dig any holes. And the reason why is because you dig a hole right now, it's going to fill up with water and kind of become a sinkhole.
Okay.
In fact, I don't dig my holes until no more than about a week before I'm expecting the plants to arrive, because normally we get bare root plants here. And then I cover them with a piece of plywood or a trash can lid or something to stop water collecting in them. It's very important. Otherwise, you get your plants don't like wet feet in general, and fruit trees in particular don't like wet feet. So you don't want to be planting it in a big old muddy hole. So.
Okay, or a hole full of ice.
Or a hole full of ice right now, yes.
Okay, well, that's great. So as part of the garden tour, we got to see the trees and the perennials that you are growing in your greenhouse. save yourself a trip to Hawaii. Just go take a look at Blythe's greenhouse. Describe what you've got in there.
Well, I have got – my greenhouse is the first year I've actually had a proper greenhouse. I have nectarines, peaches, figs, and passion fruit in there besides the usual tomatoes and peppers and stuff. And
citrus.
I don't have any citrus. I used to.
Oh, okay.
I do have one in the house, but okay. I don't have any citrus out there now. But I decided the passion fruit didn't really benefit from being out there, so it's going to be an in-house plant from now on. I do have quite a few ripe passion fruits, but
nice.
But yeah, and the figs, they won't stay in there. They go into the Arctic entryway in the winter. So.
And how long have you had these trees that are producing fruit?
The passion fruit I've had 3 years now. The others, the figs and the nectarines and the peaches, they are all new. So they haven't actually produced any fruit yet. So.
And will those stay in the greenhouse?
They'll stay in the greenhouse during the cold months, mm-hmm. in the winter, in the early spring and fall. But I'll pull a lot of them out and put them outside during the summer.
Okay. And are your plans for them to stay in pots?
Yes.
They will always live in pots?
Yes. Okay. Most of them are hardy enough to be outside in the ground, mm-hmm. but for the fruit to ripen, they really need the heat of the greenhouse.
Okay. And how big a pot are they in?
Some of them, I started them off in, I don't know, they're probably about 5 to 10 gallon pots, depending on their size of the tree. A couple of them I've already noticed I'm going to definitely have to up-pot them into larger containers. And I've heard probably the best is like a half barrel containers for a potted tree.
Mm. Is that comparable with the dryer tubs?
Well, that's a good question. Probably could be. About the size of a
might be a little bit bigger.
Yeah, a washer or dryer tub. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. That's so you'll have to put those on some kind of a roller cart or something.
I already have a couple of them on little rollers. Yeah,
yeah.
The other ones that are not as big, I'm moving around. The interesting thing is figs actually like to be in a pot that constricts them. It causes them to fruit better. So the figs will always stay in something relatively small. Mm. You can also take and like trim the root ball and trim the tree, and I've never done it, but you can prune that way, and that'll keep the plant smaller too. But when they get to that stage, I'll give it a try.
Yeah, yeah. There's a roller carts that you can get that are or build that are just made out of wood and with rollers like. Little cast, what do you call them?
You probably need bigger tires, though, if you're going over
moving
the ground.
Something, yeah. Yes. Yeah, going over the ground and something that big. Yeah,
yeah. I've got some of mine in there. Because my greenhouse is a cement and I can move them around, but you take them out of that, they just sink right into the ground. It doesn't work.
Right.
Well, I had hoped that we were going to talk a little bit about some of the permaculture principles that you have incorporated, but maybe we'll come back another time and talk about because Blythe has got it figured out how she's got ducks that are protected and trained, and they're in a pond, and that gives her nice fertile water to irrigate with. And
they will eat their weight in slugs, too. It's pretty amazing.
Okay, that is very good. So what kinds of things did you learn this year that you're going to incorporate next year?
Well, root maggots are a pain.
Oh, yeah.
But you can also start onions from seed if you do it early, like in February, and they do great. I got a bummer crop of onions this year because of that. So
very good. Really cool. So we will come back to the ongoing story of root maggots on another episode. Here, a quick reminder to everybody, the weather is dropping below freezing, so unhook and drain your hoses. Make sure they're unhooked from the house. I had a very sad lesson about that. And bring in anything that'll be damaged by cold weather because we're going now into freezing at night. Send your questions, comments to gardens@khns.org. And if you've missed past shows, you can go on to khns.org, Garden Conversation, and there you'll see recorded shows from the past. So
all right.
Thank you, Blythe, very
thank
much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
You're a wealth of knowledge.
She certainly is. Yeah. Amazing place to see.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Joni.
Thank you.